Welcome to Your Life Reset, a Virta Health podcast series. I'm your host, Teresa Link, and in this series, we'll hear from people on their Virta journey, the wins, failures, moments of adversity, and moments of joy they're experiencing along the way. So sit back, relax, and listen as we unwrap the truly human experience of Virta. Hello, and welcome back to Your Life Reset. We're trying something a bit different for the next three episodes, and I'm curious if you'll like it. We're going to do a deep dive into the story of one of our members and tell that story over three separate episodes. So in episode one of the series, we'll travel back in time, 40 years almost back in time, exploring this member's childhood and the earliest influences that ultimately altered the trajectory of his life. And then in episode two, we'll go into some of the darkest and the most challenging years of his life as a young adult struggling with a new diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, and also how this impacted not only his physical health, but his mental health as well. This part of the story is really tough for me to tell, but it's also really important to talk about this hard stuff in addition to the good stuff. Because life is a series of really hard things, and ultimately, how we choose to deal with them is what makes all the difference. Then finally, in episode three of this series, we'll talk about this member's comeback, how he was able to break the cycle of diabetes and sickness in his family. I really think you're going to love this story, so I would encourage you to kind of clear your mind, have, you know, minimal distractions. This might be a podcast where you want to sit comfortably on your sofa or in your bed or in a comfy chair and close your eyes and kind of immerse yourself into it. I'm honored to get to tell it, and I hope I tell it well. I'm really excited for you all to hear it. The year was 1978. During this year, a few really important things happened. The first baby was conceived through in vitro fertilization. Disco music was at its peak. The film Grease was released, and it was a massive hit. And the star of our show today, Robert Castillo, entered the world. Robert grew up in Houston, Texas, known for NASA's Johnson Space Center, which inspired the famous phrase, "Houston, we have a problem." They're also famous for their food scene, a diverse mix of barbecue, Cajun, and international cuisine, and of course, the best Tex-Mex. Now, Robert comes from Hispanic culture, and common in his culture, he lived in a multi-generational household with his mother, his siblings, his aunts and uncles, and the most influential person in his young life, his grandmother. She made most of the meals for the family, nearly everything from scratch. She did eggs and potatoes, fresh tortillas, vegetables, braised meats. These were all made with love. And everyone got together on the weekends after church to spend the whole day just talking and laughing and cooking and lots of eating. So again, I'd invite you to kind of close your eyes and just imagine yourself in this house. You open the door and there's the smell of fresh homemade tortillas, bacon frying, coffee brewing, meat stewing, barbacoa, which is a spicy shredded beef, carnitas, which is a stewed pork shoulder, and of course, lots of fajitas, tacos, and as Robert described, all of the sweetbreads you could eat. There's just a lot of chatter. There's a lot of laughing. Again, there's just copious amounts of food everywhere. People running around. It's loud. It's fun. Just a good time. Just a good time all around. So it was the early 80s. You know, no phones to distract you. No internet. Just you and your loved ones making memories together. And the adults drank a lot of coffee, Robert said. And his grandmother, in particular, really, really loved her coffee with a lot of cream and sugar. So Robert would, he'd wait for it to cool down. Actually, it would sit on the counter like all day. And then when it was cold, he would love to drink it. It was very sweet. It was very creamy. It was kind of like a dessert. And that was something that a lot of the kids did, is they just waited for all of the adults' coffee to cool down. And then they would drink it too. He was the first grandchild. So all the adults, particularly his grandmother, were very concerned that he was getting enough food, right? Has he eaten enough? You know, it was important because, you know, Robert and all the neighborhood kids, they played outside a lot. They were running, they were climbing trees, they were jumping fences, you know, they were getting into trouble, you know, doing a lot of the things that, I don't know, a lot of kids these days just don't do as much of. You know, so they burned a lot of energy, a lot more energy during that time. And they needed a lot of food from all that running and climbing and, you know, getting into trouble. Also, food is very, very important in their culture. It's, you know, the way they show love in many ways. So again, there was a lot of concern that the kids got enough to eat, not just the kids, but everyone. So I mentioned earlier that, you know, that Robert grew up in this multi-generational household. It's still common in some cultures, right? But it's largely been lost in a lot of Western countries, especially, you know, like here in the United States and, you know, much of, you know, Western Europe. And it's really been lost, right? In the early 20th century, that's when people moved from rural areas to cities. And this idea of, and the reality of the nuclear family really became more common, right? You've got a set of parents and you've got some kids. This was the nuclear family. And part of this change was due to limited space in urban areas, you know, smaller houses, apartments, things like that. And so there were limited larger homes that could accommodate more of these extended families. So that was a factor as well that kind of played into this shift away from that multi-generational household to more of the smaller, more, you know, nuclear family type of household. There was also a cultural shift in Western, you know, Western societies, really this growing sense of individualism, encouraging a lot of people to want to establish their own households, right? I don't live with my parents and my grandparents anymore, my grandma, my great aunt, my great grandma. You know, I have my own home. I've established my own family. And that really became a cultural shift. And Robert really told me that there was a lot of good that came from being raised by so many different adults. There were some challenges too, but, you know, overall there was this variety of lessons, variety of perspectives and opinions that all really helped shape him. And this concept is called, in at least in one way, it's called alloparenting. So alloparenting, bear with me here. It's a term that I heard. The first time I heard it is when I was reading a book called Hunt, Gather, Parent. This author, she traveled to three different countries where the cultures, they were indigenous cultures, and they wanted to learn. They wanted to learn, you know, how they would parent, how they would feed their families, what they would do socially, you know, how they would find food, you know, that sort of thing. And really one of the most prominent things that this author saw was that how children were raised by the whole village and not just the parents in this, you know, nuclear family, as we often see in our culture and in many Western cultures. So again, that concept of it takes a village was really quite evident in the places that she and her daughter visited. Fast forward to present day, the Surgeon General just put out a warning that parents are incredibly overwhelmed and experience extreme burnout. And, you know, it's no wonder that we feel this way. Many of us are just lacking that support from this village concept. You know, and I can only hypothesize that this can also play a role in the decline of cooking in many homes. You know, the rise of processed foods and fast foods. You know, families today, we're really busy. Lots of activities that the kids are doing. In many cases, there's two working parents. So there's just not a lot of time. And it makes it really difficult to really cook everything from scratch and sit down at the dinner table together and just talk about your day. That just feels, you know, more like something that maybe you can do once a week if you're lucky, you know, let alone every, you know, every night. Lots of times we wolf down our food while we're looking at a smartphone or maybe while we're driving in the car, hopefully not driving, but maybe you're a passenger in the car, quickly eating whatever you got in the drive-thru or quickly eating a sack lunch from home. You know, you're just really distracted. You know, we hardly even notice what it is that we're eating. And again, that's just a shift we didn't have this go, go, go culture. And we had more support from, again, that village, which is a lot of what Robert described as he was growing up, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. There was the ability to sit down and enjoy meals together, cook from scratch. And, you know, all of that really, really shaped how he viewed food as a child and how he viewed food as, you know, as an adult. So switching gears a little bit, I wanted to talk about some other influences in Robert's life that kind of changed, you know, how he started to think about food and how he ate. And this was several years later, again, as he was getting into his teenage years. By the late 80s, guidelines from the government, the nutrition guidelines, really began to attack fat as a primary cause of heart disease. You know, there was a lot of fat-free foods. I remember growing up the early 90s and everything was fat-free. It didn't matter how much sugar was in it. Didn't matter how many carbs were in it, as long as it was fat-free. And, you know, egg whites, margarine.
One thing I noticed was going from lard to Crisco. That was a big deal. You know, my grandmother's watching daytime TV and they're telling her that this is the better alternative. Sugar wasn't the culprit at the time.
It really shaped the way that she thought about food, the way that she thought about cooking for her family, you know, because she wanted to provide the healthiest food possible. You really do need some fat every once in a while. Potatoes, you know, just dried potatoes, maybe with margarine and probably no salt. Very bland, you know, the fact that they're very high in carbohydrate or could, you know, spike your blood sugar. So again, what we saw was this shift, this big cultural shift away from kind of cooking from scratch, using real whole fats, using fattier cuts of meat, using those drippings to flavor other foods. And Robert in particular, you know, he saw his grandmother move from all home-cooked meals to more processed, boxed foods as those guidelines changed. He also started to gain a lot of weight, something that bothered him, but, you know, he didn't quite know what to do at the time. He's still a child. He told me when we spoke that, you know, it's no wonder that he ate a lot of processed foods, even as an adult. So now you've gotten a chance to peek into Robert's life as a kid, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, and what that environment was like, what the food was like, what family was like, what his eating patterns were like when he was younger and how that started to shift, and how he started to shift as well, becoming less and less healthy. And that's really going to lead us into episode 2, which is going to be part 2 of Robert's story. And this is where his health really starts to deteriorate. And he spends the next 2 decades really battling a lot of problems with his health, his most difficult years. And you might just find yourself looking into a mirror. Maybe his story sounds a bit like yours. I hope you join me for part 2, the diagnosis. I got a chance to speak to Robert's wife, Robin, who was by his side since the very beginning.
We were going very downhill very fast with his diabetes. And I think if it wouldn't have been for Verda, I don't know if really either one of us would still be here.
Imagine you're 21 years old, full of anticipation, looking to conquer the world. It's a time of self-discovery and exploring your identity, feeling excitement about your future and what it all entails. Additionally, most 21-year-olds are at the peak of health and physical condition. At the same time, at 21, you're barely an adult, not even old enough to rent a car. Robert was supposed to be at his peak of health, supposed to be excited about the years ahead. Instead, at the young age of 21, he was given a life sentence of type 2 diabetes. On part 2 of Your Life Reset, Robert's story, I'll share the challenges he faced as a young man diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, something that changed his life forever. When I sat down with Robert to talk about this time of his life, I could tell it was difficult for him. He's been so focused on moving forward. It's easy to put these experiences in the past and leave them there. But during our interview, he knew it was important to open up and explore his past, recognize where his health challenges first started, and how this played a pivotal role in the next 20 years of his life. He remembers the doctor's office, how his heart sank when he was told that he had type 2 diabetes. Although sadly, he wasn't all that surprised. "What else should I expect?" he said. "I'm so overweight." He'd been eating a lot of sugar and a lot more processed foods during his teenage years. I recall him telling me that they ate a lot of food that was lower in fat after the government guidelines came out. But he also drank a lot of Tang and a lot of Coca-Cola, you know, because they weren't as worried about sugar. And those kinds of foods became more and more common during his teenage years, which caused his weight to continue to increase. For this reason, he wasn't that surprised, but what surprised him the most was how young he was. And since this ran so rampant in his family, he just kind of believed that type 2 diabetes was something that happened to people in his family, and that he'd just have to live with it. And I think this was the saddest thing of all for me to hear from Robert. Robert's grandparents had type 2 diabetes. His aunts and uncles, many of them had type 2 diabetes. So this was no surprise that eventually this diagnosis would be something that would happen to him. At least that's what he believed. He believed it was just his story to have type 2 diabetes. But he did think, man, you know, I'm kind of early to be having this issue, right? It didn't happen quite this early to the rest of my family. The reason that he actually went to the doctor at this young age was because he was so thirsty. He was urinating all the time, really to the point where he thought, you know, there's got to be something going on. He really just did not feel well. He lost rapid amounts of weight as well, which is pretty common when your blood sugars are just very, very high. So into the doctor. The doctor said, "You've got type 2 diabetes." His A1C was pretty high, in the eights. And so it's no surprise that he was having a lot of these symptoms and that his doctor was pretty concerned, particularly since he was, you know, so young. So he was started on metformin and glipizide right away. And things really started to improve for a little while on these medications, you know, as they often do with people who have high blood sugars. These medications do help bring them down. But what he found out was that it was only temporary. And really what his doctor said was, you know, you'll start with these medications, but the chances are high you'll just have to progress to more. It'll get worse and worse over time. And that's just the reality of type 2 diabetes. It will progress. This is the message that he heard, you know, time and time again. You know, later on, he started Jardiance for a brief time. His doctor also said that his blood sugars were still not under control, so he may have to go on insulin. And, you know, this is such a common story. You know, I used to work in a diabetes education center, and that's exactly what these patients were told. That's exactly what my patients were told, was it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. And, you know, for Robert, it did. It very much got worse over time. So the way that he was told to manage his diabetes in his 20s and also into his 30s, pretty standard practice that we've seen, where, you know, he was told he should try to change his diet, eat healthier, reduce his fat intake, eat more plant-based. He should be consuming complex carbohydrates like whole wheat bread, brown rice, whole wheat pasta, beans and legumes. Of course, increase his intake of vegetables and fruits. And really should do all this in moderation, right? And in a way that controlled calories. He was also told that he needed to change his lifestyle, become more physically active. I think this was also hard to conceptualize a bit, given how active he had been throughout much of his childhood and much of his teenage years. You know, running around, jumping, hopping fences, getting into trouble, climbing trees. You know, he had always been very active. And so being told to incorporate more activity, you know, just felt like, well, this is something I've always done. But he took this advice and he started changing his lifestyle. He started following the guidelines that he had been given. He started exercising more. Over the years, he really noticed that his health started to deteriorate. He was following the advice of his doctor. He was taking medications as prescribed. And again, those medications did help, and the lifestyle changes he made did help temporarily, but over time, his blood sugars kept going up, and so did his weight. Everything just started to get worse and worse. So again, as his health started to deteriorate, his energy levels really just completely plummeted, and this was hard for Robert. He was so used to having so much energy. He was so excited about life. He was always very, very active, and he wasn't able to do as much activity as he wanted. His personality changed a little bit. You know, he would get into ruts where he felt depressed. He got burned out. He didn't want to deal with it. You're asked to monitor your blood sugars. You're asked to balance those meals, all three meals a day and a couple of snacks. Try to eat lower fat, you know, more plant-based. Eat this, eat that, and avoid all of these things. Oh, and add, you need to take your medications. You need to make sure you have support. You need to make sure you're caring for your mental health, that you're getting adequate sleep, controlling your stress levels, that you're exercising. There's just so much to think about when it comes to managing your type 2 diabetes. It's like a cycle that never ends. So of course, he just didn't want to deal with it. He lost a lot of that optimism that he had for so long. Another thing Robert told me about was he would use sleep as a means to try to escape. Over time, he started to distance himself from family and friends. You know, he and his wife, Robin, together, he and Robin have three beautiful children. They've got an 11-year-old boy and two girls, 13 and 15. And so it was really hard for him when he felt like he didn't have as much energy to be there for his family. That's not the kind of father that he wanted to be. So not only did it impact his life, his health physically, it impacted him emotionally. It impacted him mentally. That is really where he had the hardest time. He had a health scare at work as well. He felt very dizzy. He found out that his blood sugar was over 400. He ended up going to the local medical center, got an IV. They flushed out his system, got him hydrated, got his blood sugars under control. But that was a huge scare. That was a huge scare for Robert as well as his family. At the time, his blood pressure was also really high. He was started on blood pressure medicines. He was also started on a statin for cholesterol. So by that time of his health scare, he was on two diabetes medications, one blood pressure medication, and one cholesterol medication. So the medications, the pills, they just kept piling up. This was hard for him too. He really started to lack that motivation because what he was doing just wasn't working. And this was incredibly debilitating for Robert. Again, it was just not his personality. It was not the kind of person that he had always been, not the kind of person that he wanted to be, not the father, the husband that he wanted to be. So at times he felt like giving up. But he kept pushing because that's who Robert is. Throughout his 20s and 30s, Robert tried pretty much every type of diet, did all sorts of different workouts. He was doing everything that he knew how to do, everything that his doctor recommended. Despite all of his efforts, at this time, his doctor said, "Hey, I think we're going to have to start you on insulin." I don't want to de-emphasize that insulin is a life-saving drug for many people. It's just not what he wanted his story to be. A week later, Robert got an email from Virta with the subject line, "Reverse diabetes." So he clicked on the email. And then he told me, the rest is history. I hope you join me next week for part 3 of Robert's story, breaking the cycle. What does it mean to you to reverse your diabetes?
It means being free, free of the constraints that come with being a diabetic.
Welcome to episode 3 of Robert's story, Breaking the Cycle. From a young age, Robert's view of food was shaped by childhood influences, a strong family history, and misguided nutritional guidelines. This combination ultimately led to his diabetes diagnosis. He battled the disease for nearly 2 decades, and then, 5 years ago, he discovered the one approach that truly worked for him. When he first joined Virta, his A1C was 8.5. He was on 2 diabetes medications and just weeks away from starting insulin, and he weighed 240 pounds. Since then, he's reduced his A1C to 5.1, stopped all medications, lost 80 pounds, and has maintained that weight loss for over 4 years. He's living proof that this approach truly works. Now, as Robert and I discussed what happened after that serendipitous email click from Virta, he couldn't help but be all smiles, and neither could I. In fact, there are few stories I've found as powerful as this one. Following the email, he did an intake call and found out that in order to lower his blood sugars to normal levels and get off his medications, an approach that was low in carbohydrates, moderate in protein, and much higher in fat than what he'd been used to was going to be the key to reversing his diabetes and really keeping it that way. Another thing he learned was that over time, his plan was fully customizable. It was not one size fits all. It was not black and white. Robert, his 3 kids, and his wife, they all live on a homestead about an hour outside of the city. And they're very fortunate to be able to eat sustainably, essentially off the land in their own backyard. But he recognizes that not everyone can do that. Not everyone lives on a homestead where they can just walk into their backyard and get fresh produce and cook it that night. You know, some people live in a small apartment. They've got limited cooking space. They have limited access to fresh foods. They might need to rely more on some convenience foods, fast foods, things like that. And it's okay, because no matter what your lifestyle is, you can make it work. That was something that Robert really emphasized, something that he found really valuable, in that it can work for everyone. He told me several times that the fat plays a big role in his ability to sustain this lifestyle when compared to past dietary attempts. He said it gets him through the day without being hungry, and that's so important. That's why so many diets fail, is because nobody can withstand being hungry for very long. So Robert found out that he had to kind of grow up in terms of his thinking about food. He had to mature in this area. His relationship with food, this all had to change. He had to meet head on his emotional eating, his stress eating. These were all parts of his journey, not just changing what he was eating, but why. To stress eat, to emotionally eat. In fact, he had a lot of stress at work. He would find himself pacing the office, just looking for something to eat. I do that too. Probably everyone does that. A lot of people do that. Kind of walk around, you're nervous about something, you're feeling anxious, kind of stressed. Mosey over to the fridge, open up a few cabinets. What can I snack on? What can I eat? Anything to distract me from what I'm feeling right now. So instead of snacking on the wrong things, Robert made it easier to make the right choices, to make the choices that would be best for his health, for his blood sugar. So he started making sure that he had some high-fat snacks around, like macadamia nuts, other types of nuts, but he found macadamia nuts to be the most satiating. So if he needed something, this was a real game changer. You know, the alternative might have been reaching for chips or pretzels or anything salty and crunchy, but that maybe wouldn't be the best for his lifestyle, for his health goals. So macadamia nuts ended up being a huge win. He says he's also prepared because of the education that he was provided. He listened to this. He put it into action. He felt it was so essential for his success to be properly educated about how to do this in a way that was sustainable and in a way that would help him lower his blood sugars and reduce his weight. Over time, as he was able to really get used to this way of eating and incorporate it into his daily routine without having to think about it too much. He started to move his goals more toward working on some of his triggers. Not just what to eat, but why. What made him feel the urge to eat? What type of emotion was he feeling? What was he stressed out about? And this took a lot of maturing in his thought process and really being mindful about not just what he was eating, but why he was eating it. And he found this to be kind of a revelation in his journey as well, something that really influenced him as he continued to grow. This has also been something that has influenced him as a father, as he grew into a man, not just on his Virta journey, but his journey through adulthood. It influenced how he's raised his three kids. So again, he's got an 11-year-old boy and a 13 and 15-year-old girls. And he and his wife, Robin, felt that they needed to teach their kids about this. They needed to help them feel empowered to make healthy choices as well, because they wanted to do this as a family.
So they don't eat sugar anymore. You know, they don't eat a lot of processed foods. And it's made a huge difference.
And this was really important to them, to instill this kind of education in their kids and get their buy-in. They started to see some of the same health challenges in their own children.
Well, my oldest and my son were kind of gaining weight. And it made me reflect on my upbringing, and it made me reflect on how I felt, especially with my son, because obviously I can relate to him.
He started to see himself in his son, and he did not want that same future for him. So what they do is they sit down as a family. They talk about it. They talk about their goals. They talk about Robert's story. They talk about Robin's story. Empowering your kids with this kind of information, you know, when they go off on their own, they leave the nest. I went to college and I would eat ice cream for just about every single meal. Ice cream with sugary cereal on top, of course. It was a far cry from the type of dietary advice that was instilled upon me as I was growing up. But over time, those lessons, the value in health, really came back. And it has stayed with me as an adult, as I've continued to grow up. So it's my belief that Robert's three kids, they go out into the world, and even if they, I guess, stray far away from some of the values about healthy eating that they had been taught, they'll come back and recognize the importance of what was instilled within them. Now, if we go back in time just a bit, you know, we've been talking about Robert's kids and how they're flying the nest. But if we go back into when they were younger, the conversations that they had as a family impressed me so much. But what impressed me the most was how they talked about how to have mature, grown-up conversations with friends at school, friends that would make comments.
My suggestion to him was to ask for support in what he's doing instead of being criticized.
You know, kids make comments all the time. Does your mom not let you have ice cream? Your mom sounds mean. But empowering your kids to have those conversations in a mature way gives them that ability to help find common ground. It's difficult to do that as an adult. Most adults aren't capable of having those types of mature conversations where one or both parties don't get defensive. And they're teaching that to their kids as teenagers. So not only are they instilling health values with their children, they're also instilling how to communicate with others with empathy and understanding. When I caught up with Robin and asked her about how Robert is different today, she just beamed the entire time. She spoke of his resilience. She spoke of his drive, his persistence, his problem solving, his positivity, his optimism, his unwillingness to roll over and give up. Another thing that Robin would consistently go back to was how much Robert's energy changed. He wanted to be more active. He wanted to help out more on the homestead. He had the energy to do that.
You know, I'm 46. I'm not trying to prove anything. I just want to be healthy and I want to feel strong.
Now, it's not that Robert and his family don't have obstacles. They have lots of obstacles. You know, it's difficult when you are the only one in your extended family that has been able to reverse this condition. It's normal to have other family members or friends kind of question what you're doing.
I've had a lot of people try to sabotage my efforts, you know, or you know, tell me it's going to be okay if I have this one time.
He thought that was so odd. Why wouldn't they want to be supportive? They would say, it's fine if you just have this food this one time. Why can't you just eat a little bit? You know, and if he said no, they would just react negatively. They'd get defensive. It's people that he was close to. It's family, close friends. You know, when someone else we know is making a certain type of change, and it's making a change for the better, sometimes it makes us feel uncomfortable. We don't want to be left behind. We want to feel like we're normal. So it's just a normal human reaction, but it does make it hard for the person that's trying to make a change. So he's had to kind of learn to let that just kind of fall away and not let that bother him because he's confident in who he is. Robert's story reminds us that real lifestyle change often emerges from moments of darkness, whether it's a personal health scare or seeing a person that you love go through one. There's always that turning point that drives us to take action and make a change. Robert's success in reversing his diabetes stems from proper education and strong family support. But most importantly, he had the mindset to make it happen. He's always kept his why front and center. I wanted to tell Robert's story not just about the way his health improved for the better, the way that he transformed his health. I wanted to go into the dark days as well. I wanted to dive into the earliest memories that he could remember about what he ate as a kid, what he ate as a teenager, how he felt about food, how his family influenced his choices around food. All of that is so relevant to who we become. And it was such a pleasure to get to sit down with him and basically hear his life story. My journey's never done. I'm constantly evolving. And I deserve it. You deserve it. You deserve to feel your best. So I hope you got that from this three-part series of Robert's story. Robert and Robin, it was a pleasure to speak with both of you and an honor to be able to tell your story to our listeners. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. And if you'd like to regain control of your metabolic health and feel like yourself again, check us out at virta.com. That's VIRTA.com. Your Life Reset is for informational purposes only and shouldn't be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Contact your provider if you suspect you have a medical problem. I'll chat with you all again soon. Until then, stay inspired, my friends.